Done. Okay. Now we can do the show. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. It's never done, Adam. It's never done.
But... Well, posting to Facebook is done.
You might... Oh, yeah.
So I did that.
He's reached the end of the internet, folks, and that's it. You can shut her down.
Feels like I have reached the end of the internet several times, but yeah.
Oh, and nice to be back. Thanks for... holding the fort.
Oh, thanks for doing the show by myself for 2 weeks.
All by himself.
You're welcome.
It was out of my control.
I know. Anyway, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. We're here every Thursday at 5 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture. No, we're not. I'm reading the wrong script.
That's the next show.
Yeah, we're here to talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And sometimes we interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be Ward 3 Councillor Phil Ault, who's going to talk to us about the budget deliberations earlier this week down at City Hall. That will be at the bottom of the hour for this week. For the first half, we're going to revisit the impeachment deliberations. Speaking of deliberations, south of the border there, it seems incredibly likely that Donald Trump will be impeached by the end of the year. But first, speaking of Trump...
Speaking of peaches.
Because he has to be involved in everything. So there was some drama in London this week at the NATO meeting. Donald Trump met Justin Trudeau while they were there. They had a little face-to-face time. I believe it was the first time they met face-to-face since Trudeau was reelected. And so, I mean, it went well. I mean, as well as meeting Donald Trump face-to-face can go. There was a 40-minute impromptu press conference before they started the meeting, and where, among other things, Donald Trump was talking about how maybe Canada should have a payment plan for, you know, all the money we owe NATO, even though the agreement about using 2% of GDP doesn't go into effect until 2022, or that was the goal. I mean, it's not really a promissory note like Trump seems to think it is, that everyone in NATO owes America an IOU. That's not how it works. And then later, hot mic and camera caught Justin Trudeau, Boris Johnson, Emmanuel Macron, and Princess Anne having a laugh.
And a mystery guy of some kind that was just kind
of... I think
of
he's the Danish. He was the Danish prime minister.
Oh.
I think they've identified him.
Yeah, because in the shot, you can hardly see Princess Anne, and then you just see the hair. It's like, hey, it's Princess Anne.
Because Princess Anne, and my sister and I have the theory about this, that, you know, she was like walking around the party looking for people slagging Trump and then jumped on any conversation she could.
And she's probably quite capable, unlike Ivanka.
Because there's another video of the Queen greeting the Trumps. And Prince Charles and the Duchess of Cornwall are there, too. And you see the Queen sort of, like, indicate to Princess Anne, who's, like, standing, like, several feet away in a doorway, like, hey, come on over and meet the, you know, the President of the United States. And you can just see Princess Anne basically go, no, I'm good.
It's like,
No, that's good. I don't know. It's fine.
Well, she's always been a bit of a rebel if the crown is anything to go by. Which is worth checking out. I don't know if you've been watching.
Yeah, rumor has it she's the one who told the Queen it was a bad idea to marry for Charles to marry Diana.
Oh, I haven't got that far yet, but
I don't know if that's in the Crown, but that's the scuttlebutt.
Well, she wasn't wrong, but anyway, enough.
In retrospect,
enough about the royals.
So
the hot mic became a bit of an international incident. I happened to log
was
on.
It?
Well, no, it was it in that. It was the international incident that shouldn't have been, but I logged on to the BBC because I'm looking for UK election and other things we may or may not have been talking about. And the top story is Trump calls Trudeau two-faced. So, but Trump calls everybody everything. He called Macron before the thing started. What was it? Brain dead.
Yeah.
And he's nasty.
Yeah.
And he's got and we'll get into it
Checks
a bit,
out.
I guess, when we talk more about impeachment. But... He has names for everybody. So once he names you, you should be either concerned or you can laugh it off. As Trudeau did. I think he did a pretty good recovery on it. At least he wasn't like using expletives or said anything really, really. He said stuff that was recoverable. Whereas I want to know what beer he was drinking too, actually, in a wine glass or something. So a lot of was put on this. I mean, I don't, after all of that, because it's been a busy couple few days, what came out of the NATO conference? I don't think anybody can tell you.
That's what came out of it.
That's it. Because
no,
Trump left in a huff, right?
Well,
he's like, I'm out of here, you guys.
Well,
I'm
it was interesting because at that point, Macron had made like comments about the brain dead comments, and it inadvertently got Donald Trump to basically endorse NATO, which was a weird...
Because he's been beating on it for...
Right, because it was like, well, I think everything in NATO's going good, really good right now. We got a really good relationship. And it's like, okay, aren't you the guy who's always like... Of course, later that day, he goes back to berating people about how they owe him and the United States.
You owe us.
Right, and... I don't even think what happened was that bad. It's like if you look at the video, it's like 45 seconds long, and in it Trudeau basically says, like, Boris Johnson says to him, like, oh, like, you were running late today, and Justin Trudeau's like, yeah, we were 40 minutes late because Donald Trump had an impromptu 40-minute press conference.
He who not be named.
And everyone's like, oh, yeah. And then they kind of have like a giggle about that.
Yeah, he's like, yeah.
And then you don't hear there's some Trudeau's talking, but you can't make what he says. And then he says, like, the staff. You could see the jaws of his staff drop on the floor, and it's like, you know what? I can see if the whole thing had started with Donald Trump going, or not, with Justin Trudeau going, like, this effing guy, or like just something like that, and like, you know, like, or you know, his breath smells like cat food or something.
Yeah.
But I hate dealing with Trump. He smells like cheeseburgers and regret or something like remarkably more insulting than that. But it's crazy to me.
He was still being diplomatic, even though it was table talk. Like, it was chit-chat, right?
Yeah, it was chit-chat. And, like, do you think that's the worst thing any of these people have said about Donald Trump?
Oh, no.
No. Of course not.
Definitely not.
And the whole... I was watching the press conference the next day with Trudeau, and it, like, goes... Like, Glenn McGregor... I was so pissed at Glenn McGregor right off the bat. Do you think you have Donald Trump an apology? For what? For what, yes. Glenn?
Apologize to the man that never, ever apologized about anything ever.
For, like, for just talking about the incredibly wacko circumstances where Donald Trump kicks off of one-on-one with a 40-minute press conference. The guy who's, like, famous for, like, having a press secretary who hasn't had a press briefing in, like, 300 days. But, like, anytime, like, you know, he can just...
Who is the press secretary now, anyway?
Stephanie Grisham.
There you go. For 10 points.
10 points to Gryffindor.
Well done. No, I had no idea. I mean,
like, a 40-minute press conference where he complained about impeachment for at least 20 of them, said that the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee was deranged, along with other things.
Yeah, was it a very sick man? And
yeah, and then berates Trudeau about, like, oh, when are you going to pay the 2%? When, like, basically,
what are you paying now? I saw that. I was like, what are you paying now? He's,
you know,
like,
that
that
YouTube
point
clip.
Something?
Of Stewie beating up Brian, shouting, where's my money? That's basically what that was, except without, like, the blood and guts.
Somebody needs to superimpose the head on the, where's my money?
And then, like, the press get on it, too. It's like, yeah, Prime Minister Trudeau, when are you going to give us our money? And it's
you cheapskate Canadians.
And it's
what
lucky,
are you doing?
But lucky it wasn't me, because they're talking about Article 5. And it's like, what's the one and only time Article 5 has been evoked? It was in defense of the United States on September 11th, 2001.
That's right, yes.
And it ended up costing 157 Canadians their lives when we went to the defense of the United States with the invasion of Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mean, forgotten, but it's like it just becomes a money and numbers game. Yeah.
Like, let's put a price on that, Trump. How about the 400 some odd guys from the UK who were killed? How about the 100 some odd guys from, like, Spain and Italy and France and, like, the other members of the G7 who, again, came to the defense of the United States when Article 5 was evoked for the first and only time?
Yeah, they don't count because they're not America. I don't know, I shouldn't say that, but it's...
That's been on my mind for a couple of days.
Oh, I can tell. I'm so glad you've got it off your chest now. It's a lot of rip, man. So, yeah, I mean, I was wondering, too, what was going to come out of the conference in terms of something that I heard they were going to discuss is, let's call it the Turkey situation. I think Turkey is looking for open license to beat on the Kurds more and looking for NATO backing on that. It was supposed to get complicated. Didn't hear a thing. So maybe it didn't... It's been tabled till next year. So in the meantime... Turkey, as Trump likes to say. He has this weird way of saying Turkey, whether it's the one he's pardoning or...
He puts the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Turkey. And in all seriousness.
And Dina.
Beat on the Kurds.
Turkey and Dina.
So that's something that I'm obviously going to follow post all the hot sip that was going on No, hot goss. That's what the kids say.
Hot goss.
What's the hot goss? I'm like, I don't know, man.
It wasn't even that hot. And you know how I know it's not
tepid
hot?
Tepid gossip.
Because
yes.
Brian Lilly came to the defense of Trudeau.
Oh.
So Brian Lilly, famous conservative commentator, member of Sun News Channel, was like, guys, this isn't that big a deal. And it's like, okay, you have Brian Lilly on your side, not taking the chance to, you know, dunk on Trudeau. You know how far off the beaten path you've strayed in terms of, like, overall.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I
rarely touch the sun now. I mean, well, not even just paper, but even on even on the screens. You know.
Right. So,
the cyber.
So,
what else is going on?
Well, the House of Commons
yes.
went back in session today.
Yes.
And the
throne
new
speech.
Yeah, throne speech. I don't have any details about the
throne
speech.
I don't really either because it's working, but there's a new speaker too, right?
There's a new speaker. Yeah. I'm trying to find that info.
That's the problem with breaking news and, you know, your work, right?
It's Anthony Rota is the new speaker.
Liberal MP.
Anthony Rota is the new speaker.
Wow. Backbencher? Or don't know that name at all.
Yeah, well, he's from the backbench.
Hmm.
Jeff Regan was also in the running, but he didn't get the job again.
Oh.
So,
I take it Andrew Scheer didn't take a jab at it either. I guess leaders officially can't be the speaker, can they? No.
No, I don't think so.
Leaders,
well, maybe.
Leaders for now.
But I mean, if you're opposition leader already, anyway, because Elizabeth May was leader, and she was going to try for thinking about going for speaker.
Was she in the running? Or?
She wasn't in the running, but she had mentioned it before she announced her retirement.
Yeah.
Andrew Scheer has a drama of his own that his popularity has decreased since the election.
And getting deeper.
Yeah. And then last week he appoints Leona Alistair, who was famous for crossing the floor. I think, was it earlier this year or last year she crossed the floor from the Liberals?
Yeah.
But a Toronto area MP, which at least answers like my criticism post-election coverage was that, you know, everyone was talking about Western alienation and for the Liberals, but nobody was talking about Toronto alienation for the Conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
So he put a Toronto area MP as his deputy leader, but she was used like a few months ago. She was a Liberal, which, I mean, looks like. I mean,
it's supposed to hearken to the kinder, gentler,
right? Some people can say that or suggest that, you know, it's a sign of like reaching out or bipartisanship. You know, someone who used to be liberal and now is conservative, so maybe somewhere in the mushy moderate. But I just took it as like this is just about owning the libs. See, like I got somebody from your team, and now they're on my team, and I'm putting them on the front bench. I pulled you,
add
Trudeau.
Evil laugh, right?
Right, and then she steps in it first interview.
Yeah,
when they're like, you know, well, what do you think of Andrew Scheer not going to gay pride parades? And she's like, oh, it's nobody talking about who's going to St. Patrick's Day parades.
Is it
dunk?
Is there a pride float in the St. Patrick's Day parade? I bet there is.
Probably.
I haven't been to it in, I'm going to say, 30 years, but I got chewed out for jaywalking across it by some cop.
Oh, man.
Way back. I remember it was a really nice day, though. Wow, this is, I don't know.
You let go with a warning?
Yeah. Thankfully, yes, but. Oh, yeah. So where were we going with that? St. Patrick's Day. Yes, that's right. No.
I just wanted to mention that because, you know, talk about fumbling in your debut, it's you know,
yeah, when you get those headlines, it's never a good start.
No.
So who else is on the docket here? We
should touch on Doug Ford.
Yes.
Appointing himself the Minister of National Unity.
Were you saying that tongue in cheek, or is this a real?
No, I think that's. I mean, it was.
Did
weird.
Did he actually say that?
No, he didn't say that. But I mean, that's
implied,
what he was going for. And
it's implied.
I saw somebody say that it seemed weird, like all the other premiers were kind of like following his lead, like even after weeks of like Scott Moe talking about that Trudeau has to basically like serve or die or, you know, at the whims of the West.
From what I've seen, I honestly think that all that hard work that he was talking about in the summer was a bunch of breakout groups. And do you remember, and I'm not sure if they still do it, there's like training that you can go to in the States. I think Dalton McGuinty did it,
mm-hmm.
where a leader is sort of like, seems kind of shaky and not popular. They go to this training and they emerge from it and they seem like a completely different person.
Mm.
Doug Ford, and you know, believe me, I'm it's what my own opinion doesn't matter, but compared to, say, The Spring and now, totally different show. The Doug Ford Show is on a different channel, and he is presenting himself a bit more polished, let's say, rather than that sort of, I would call it folksy, but not really. Let's call it the Fordian approach.
Like combative.
His brother had, where it was like, he wrote an article. It was in the Toronto Star. And I'm like, they have a hatred on for the Star ever since the days of Rob Ford and Daniel Dale, right? And
it goes back
among others,
before that.
Among other Robin Doolittle, among others, right? So that was, I was like, whoa, wait, Doug, who? I'm reading the article and I didn't see the header. I'm like, who wrote this? I'm like, Doug Ford. But also the way it was written.
Is there another Doug Ford?
Yeah, the way it was written, too. Like, it's he actually got the thesaurus out or whatever. You know, maybe somebody did ghost writing for him. I don't know.
Yeah.
But so I was surprised. But this is this whole kinder, gentler. They said, you know, the approach is going to be different this time around. And it seems to be that's what's happening. I don't think the overarching is completely different this time around. Like, they're still conservatives and they still have their whatever.
Mm.
But the presentation is markedly different now. I don't know whether that's good or bad. I kind of prefer it when it's...
Well, it's... You know, I mean...
Gives us more to talk about when it's kind of rough, right?
That's the thing, too, is that the pretty packaging can still hide, like, a magnitude of issues. Like, we're still... Like, the thing with the Auditor General's report yesterday that they just spent $4 million on those ridiculous ads for the carbon tax, like protesting the carbon tax, or
said partisan and waste of money. Was
like
that
the money,
that?
The money they lost.
You're just wasting cash.
$231 million it's going to cost to tear down all the windmills and tear up all the green energy contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Like what happened with teachers yesterday, the one day strike yesterday, where there's, you know, I've seen some commentary about, you know, greedy teachers that usually comes up, but I mean it's not as noticeable as it's been in the past. I think there's a lot of goodwill for teachers out there.
If people are thinking that that has gone away with the one-day strike, It's going to keep going. And as more groups' contracts go into discussions, it's
only... Well, the Catholic teachers have filed no board now.
Right, which is... no board's a 17-day, generally 21-day countdown. So here's a labor guy saying things off the top of his head. You know, 17 days. And there is actually no board anymore, even though they say no board. But that's another story for another show. Called the working week that doesn't exist anymore.
So stay tuned.
That's an inside joke, right? Maybe the working week should come back because there's so much going on. Those discussions, I mean, that is definitely not going well for the government, I don't think, because that looking at it, not just from a labor perspective, but when they're saying, oh, we've made all kinds of concessions. If you make these, if you present certain things that didn't actually become anything, for example, the four online courses, and then they're like, well, we're reducing it to two. I mean, those courses already have to exist for it to be a concession, right? They said they were going to do it. You can't take things away from stuff that doesn't exist yet at a negotiating table because it's just nonsense.
But
it's
that's...
You might as well... It's fairy dust. And
that's the shell game they've been playing, though, because they make
garbage.
Cuts. They make $1.3 billion in cuts and then reinstate that funding and go, see, we increased the funding.
It's shell game style, right? It's like, well, we did this. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
And how do you pronounce his last name? I would say Lecce, but...
Lecce, yeah.
It's Lecce, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
A bit of an aside there, because so I heard somebody call him Leech, and it wasn't me. It was a hockey player called Reggie Leech, spelt the same. Anyway, it doesn't matter. God, where was I going with that?
I don't know.
Completely derailed.
But we need to go to our next topic, so...
Oh, yeah, okay. So we're still... We're just... All the topics are just going one big topic, so...
Okay, so... Peach. Since we mentioned Trump already, we're going to talk about the impeachment, that's happening in the États-Unis right now. Congress... Sorry, I wanted to say...
No, that's good. I like it. It's a good bilingual.
Congress, the judicial branch, the Judicial Committee of Congress, had their first impeachment hearing... yesterday, they heard from four constitutional scholars. Three of them were invited by the Democrats. One of them was invited by the Republicans. So it was 3-1 in terms of whether there's some impeachable stuff going on. This morning, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, came out and said, we're going to be drawing up articles of impeachment. She's directed Jerry Nadler, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, to draw up those articles. So, Trump's getting impeached. So, Nancy Pelosi, being a pretty game theorist kind of legislator has the votes.
But yeah, it wasn't initially for a long, long time. Who did I see? I think it was Chris Hedges said, you know, they could have impeached Trump on day one due to his business dealings.
Yeah.
Never did. Held off. And now, of course, the way it's playing, or at least Trump's trying to play, is that, well, they're just doing this because there's an election coming up. Witch hunt, right? It's like, how many times? That phrase is just so, like, run into the ground now, right? And that one, I did see a little bit of it, you know, sort of the supercut of the constitutional experts, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And the dissenter, what did he say? There's thin evidence. It's
Jonathan Turley.
And he also said he voted against him.
Yeah.
So that means he voted for Hillary, I guess?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of people who didn't vote for Trump or Hillary. They voted for, you know, one of the third-party candidates or was an American hero and wrote in, like, George Washington or something.
Ficus.
Yeah.
Something like that.
An inanimate carbon rod.
Exactly.
So he's one of these, I guess Trump would call him a never-Trumper, but let's call him a Trump skeptic. But, I mean, his arguments
were... But he was for the Republicans, too, though, right?
Like, right, he was invited by the Republican House members. But his arguments were, like, super weak. His arguments were like, you know what, if I saw a quid pro quo, I would say, let's go ahead with impeachment. And it's like, you don't see a quid pro quo? Like, everybody involved has admitted this as a quid pro quo. Gordon Sondland, the UK ambassador, not the UK, the EU ambassador, said, it's a quid pro quo. Mick Mulvaney said... in a press conference, it was a quid pro quo, so what? Get over it. It happens all the time. So, you know, you have people confessing.
Tell Zelensky to do the right thing. Yeah, it's
like, you have people confessing left and right. Yeah. And he's like, well, I don't know if I see a quid pro quo, do you? It's so bizarre that, because Lawrence O'Donnell made this point last night that, you know, nobody on the GOP side was trying to talk about the facts. They weren't like saying the case is off. There's evidence you don't see. Nobody was making that case. Nobody was making the case, in other words, that Donald Trump is innocent. They were making the case that the process is bad. The witnesses are bad. We're not being allowed to call witnesses. You've been biased from the start. Nowhere is the case being made that Donald Trump is innocent.
No. And as I said before, Trump's always about the character assassination, right? So-and-so is mentally ill or...
Yeah.
And, you know, nicknames, I think I said this already about the nicknames. Because there's also, and this is a bit of a parallel story that evolved Wednesday, that the trying to get the tax returns has finally gone to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And it's going to be tied up there for a while. And it's a reflection of other... allegedly or possibly impeachable things. And I don't know, was that a condition of the Democrats too with this whole thing? Is like, we need the tax returns, we need to see where the money's going. This is a bit of a sidebar, but it plays into everything, right?
I think it's a separate, I mean, there are a lot of groups who are after Trump's taxes. One of them is, I believe not the Southern District, because that's federal. I think it's the New York Attorney General who's after the taxes. Plus, there's a lawsuit, I think, by Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia. That is, that's the emoluments case.
Yes.
And so they're trying to get the tax returns as well. And
he's just said no, no, no. And it's the same with trying to get people to testify from the White House. And he said no, 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 which is also impeachable.
And that was Turley's other point. It's like, well, we haven't really heard from like the people with like direct knowledge, like Mick Mulvaney and Mike Pompeo and Rick Perry. It's like, well, wouldn't you know it? Those are the guys who aren't being allowed to testify.
Yeah, so it's this endless circle, right? But you have to wonder whether, like I said about the nicknames, if the who is his appointees were Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, right?
Neil Gorsuch and Kavanaugh.
Gorsuch,
yeah.
So yeah, if they don't get
Gorsuch, I do like Gorsuch.
Gosling.
That sounds like he should be fighting the Flash.
If he doesn't go that way, if they don't go his way, it'll be like Goofy Gorsuch and Kooky Kavanaugh.
Well, I mean, will they not go his way?
Well, that's the thing. If they're actually following law and the rule of law, then realistically they shouldn't go his way. But because it's for their man Trump, realistically. But again, how long to play out? And is Ruth Bader Ginsburg going to stay alive long enough? Well, seriously though, like she's ill again.
No,
right?
It's like,
is she gonna make it?
It's. I mean, I like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But yeah, it does seem like something new every week with her, unfortunately.
Yes.
So I
don't know where it's going to go.
I mean, fingers crossed. I mean, you know, this kind of ends up in a thing with the similar circumstances to what happened in 2016, where what's-his-face died. What's-his-face? Scalia.
Scalia, yes.
Scalia
Ruth
died.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg's friend, but also a heavy-duty conservative.
Frenemy, let's say. Where Scalia died in January, and then, you know, the Obama named Garland. And then that the vote was held up until Trump took office, and that's almost a separate matter.
This is almost a complete sidebar from the impeachment stuff, but it all plays into each other. The three government rings, right? Judiciary,
the three government
rings.
That was a three ring circus metaphor. Schoolhouse rocks.
Yeah, I know. That's probably knew more about American government by the time I was whatever age. Because of Schoolhouse Rock.
Right.
You're wondering about American government, folks.
Or Simpsons parodies of Schoolhouse Rock.
Even better. Even better. So.
Right.
Too bad it doesn't exist now because they'd stick Trump in there somewhere. So.
Oh, well, if anyone needs Schoolhouse Rock.
Maybe that's how he learned all his presidential stuff. We don't know. It seems like it at times, right? So.
That he knows stuff?
That he only knows stuff generally from like cartoons and...
Yeah.
In my opinion. Sorry.
It depends if the cartoon's
about. The one is people coming after us, but... Huh.
Right. Right. I don't know what to think, but I think one of the things that I will mention maybe to round this up is that there's a narrative that it's all about the political gamesmanship, and I've seen this by a lot of commentators on American TV, and it's like, oh, well, it's going to go to the Senate, he's going to be acquitted, and then it's going to be, you know, he's going to dance around and talk about how he was acquitted, and it's like, okay, well, that's fine. Let's focus on the real point of all this, which is to maybe shake a lot of Americans out of their complacency that, yeah, the economy's fine, maybe you have a job today, maybe, you know, stuff from China's a little more expensive, but otherwise things are going about the world a-okay.
Mm.
But yesterday Donald Trump adjusted like food stamps to basically throw between like 1 million to 3 million people off food stamps. And that's like about $160 a month. Like just like the punitive, like just punishing people aspect of this regime too. And then when you take that and you say, look at all this stuff, the emolument stuff, the Ukraine stuff, the Mueller stuff. Yeah, let's take a vote in the Senate. I want every Republican in the Senate to attach their name to all this crime and say it's a-okay, knowing full well that in the future a Democrat can just be equally as corrupt as this. And what are they going to say? And it's I know the Lindsey Grahams of the world. Well, actually, I know I want Lindsey Graham's name to attach to this because he's supposed to be like a national security hawk, right?
Yeah.
But I also want like the mealy mouth ones like Mitt Romney and Susan Collins and Cory Gardner, the ones who know it's wrong, the ones who like off the record will say this is nuts. Staple your name to it, guys. Let's see what happens.
You're the king of the summary, my friend.
Cool.
Winner, Gagnon. Okay.
We need that sound effect.
Yes, I'm going to work on that.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to rearrange the deck chairs here to talk to Mr. Alt from Ward 3 about budget stuff here in Guelph. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Ooh, saucy.
That was salty.
By request. The Vanishers featuring Ginger St. James. That was Christmas Wish at the End of the Bar. From 2009, but it sounds so fresh. I don't know.
Should we say who requested it?
I did. I said, by request, our guest.
Oh, okay. I wasn't listening.
Who's neither vanishing nor at the end of the bar.
Well, this is kind of a bar.
Trying to do the segue, but yeah. Drinks are afterwards.
You tried.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ward 3's Phil Ault.
It sounds like we've already been drinking anyway. Moving on.
Coffee, just coffee.
So, Phil, we wanted to have you in to talk about the budget. How do you think it went on Tuesday? How do you feel?
I actually feel pretty good about it. I don't have any problems with the decisions we made, some of which I don't agree with, but that's democracy. And I don't have any problems with the tax increase for some fairly important services that we provide, everything ranging from police services to hospital improvements to transit improvements. All of them were good.
Yeah, because there is that sort of thing online the last couple of days. I've been seeing tax and spend. It's a little bit more complicated than that.
It's quite complicated, and I'm quite prepared to talk to anybody about that. There's two points that I want to make. In fact, I have had one email on the budget, and the budget said, don't you think it's a little high?
Mm.
And my response is, it's actually not that much higher than we have done in the past two budgets or so.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I think is very important, it's a point that I'll stand by, when people are talking about the budget having to stay within cost of living or inflation, the one thing they are forgetting is that we are tremendously restrained by how we can tax and how we can fund our city programs. We don't have the latitude of either the federal or the provincial government, which have a number of different tax pockets, income tax being the largest, of course, but sales taxes as well as what maybe if we were in Alberta, I shouldn't say petroleum taxes as well.
Right.
These are all significant taxes by which we raise revenues for necessary services. In the city, we have the most regressive tax that we can deal with, and that's property tax. Consequently, it's not surprising at all to me, and it shouldn't be to anybody else, that our tax increases are substantially beyond those that the federal government and the provincial government might provide. And let me give you a couple of good examples. The provincial government has been notorious at downloading services to us and then stating that they will be revenue neutral.
Yeah.
But the revenue neutrality ends in about 3 or 4 years, and the best example that I can point to is our court services, which were revenue neutral originally. They are not. The city has to make that up somehow. And if we wish to have a quality city, we need to understand that many of our costs are going to go up unless, and this is my proposal only, we consider that all emergency services are assumed by the province. That includes policing, paramedics, hospital services, all those services that are provided to virtually every Ontarian and which the cities must in some way, shape, or form provide revenue for. It's a ridiculous taxation system.
Right, and it's already kind of stuck in a certain regards to, and this came up a lot because the increase in the police budget was so huge, 9.8%. The city basically kind of has to eat that. There's really no way of like going back to the police board and saying, can you shave it down like 5%? Like, that's not a directive the city council can give to the police board.
Oh, yeah, and it's not half as tasty as the cake that somebody bakes a file into for the prisoners trying to break out. It's a difficult one, and I was very honest with Chief Kobe and the chair of the police board, Don Drone, and the president of the police association. This was a tough one for me. It didn't sit well, but the breakdown of why those costs must go up is fairly important. Let's consider that over the last 4 or 5 years, and even previous to that, we've been focusing on building a new police services headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And that, too, is something that was necessary. I don't doubt that. There were a great number of complaints about the cost of that. Well, the costs have gone up because Guelph has been very, very reluctant to spend on infrastructure programs.
Yeah.
Can you say library? and this, as a consequence, raises our costs. Well, the two police chiefs prior to Chief Kobe were rightly concerned with that. That facility needed to be built. And at the same time, had they been going forward with a request for infrastructure funding and for operations funding, we would have seen squawking the likes of which you didn't see till this year.
Right. And this kind of got back to when I did the interview with Chief Kobe last week, and I think this is between the lines where he was talking, was that because of the ask for the our headquarters renovation, it was harder, that much harder for the police to ask for substantially more people resources.
He's absolutely correct. Yeah. I'm very sympathetic to our past police chiefs. And I'm not a person who holus bolus will say our cops are tops and they need everything. That's just not my approach. I believe more in community policing, and I believe in intervention and support as possibly alternatives to providing greater funding for policing. But the sad reality is we need to understand that unfortunately there are things that go on in our community that require a police presence and require police to respond.
Yeah. There was some, maybe not audible gasp, but there was maybe some shock when Councillor Gawler said that he's heard from a constituent who says that they carry knives when they go downtown now. And I tweeted that, of course, and somebody popped up and said, like, that's crazy to me because I don't feel unsafe downtown. And it's something I tried to get at with Chief Kobe, too, that we have a very bicameral city now where some people feel incredibly unsafe. Some people still feel that Guelph is a very safe place, and I think that's the sort of no man's land where we're trying to negotiate this. A lot of people feel this is too much, and other people feel like finally we're getting some more police resources.
Well, I would be very careful saying that anybody's carrying a weapon, especially if it's concealed, because that's against the law.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is fairly important is you mentioned the word bicameral, but I want to be a little bit more blunt about that. I think we have to acknowledge that there is an increase in mental illness on the streets, and that's a sad fact. There is in many senses probably a little bit more bipolarism.
Yeah.
But that is not a threat to the average individual, and I think that it was those are unfortunate words coming out of Gawler's mouth. Mm. I do not know of anybody who feels unsafe. I do not feel unsafe downtown. I do recognize that petty crime has gone up. That's something that is beyond doubt. On the other hand, to say that Guelph has suddenly become Detroit 2019 is absurd. We know that Guelph is still one of the safest cities in the country.
Yeah.
The fact that we've dropped, I believe it was from number one or number two down to number five, is a minuscule drop. Mm. The real issue is, are we policing in such a fashion that we will be able to state that Guelph is still a city that is safe and secure and pleasant to live within?
Right. It makes me think, too, about something Councillor McKinnon said. And I know you and him kind of disagreed on this point, but his concern, I think...
I don't disagree with anyone. I get along with everyone. I get along with well, you and Scott I mean, so well.
There's
I even
disagreement.
Brought you
it's
oranges.
This... Oh,
but
thank
don't
you.
Tell Chris, because we don't want him to know there's food in the studio.
Well, it's kind of a week for a bribe to the press, but I'll take
as long
it.
As long as I don't peel them, it's okay.
They're easy to peel.
But... Councillor McKinnon was getting at something, which is, the city's taking on more and more in terms of, like, what would be considered provincial responsibility.
He's correct.
Yeah. And it makes me think, though, like, people are hungry for leadership. And we saw this come up with the harm reduction housing debate. Yeah, there was blowback, but there was also incredible support to just try and get something going, too. Can the city... can the city afford to not act, I think, is the question that, it seems very unlikely that we're going to get that support from the upper levels of government. And it's like, is this like an inevitable direction we're going in, that there's going to be more expectations for the city to find that funding for social housing to do that work?
That's an excellent question. I think that your point, can the city afford not to act, is one that we need to address very, very carefully. On some things, we cannot afford to act. On the other hand, we also need to recognize that what we as a council could become is an activist council.
Mm.
And activist as much as anything else, lobbying the other levels of government. You heard about it during the election, Justin Trudeau talking about going around the provincial governments and providing directly to cities the support that they need. And I would wholeheartedly embrace that. The unfortunate part of that is I think it was an election meme only. And I don't think that we're going to see it. What cities need to do is really push for essentially constitutional changes.
Yeah.
So that we become recognized in such a fashion as we can provide for different forms of taxation at the municipal level and for greater control over some of those factors that are raising costs and are actually making it more difficult to serve our community. We shouldn't have to wait as council Councillor Wettstein and I discussed this morning, Councillor Wettstein being a retired councillor, for those that don't know, it's been darned nearly 40 years since a new library had been proposed for Guelph. Mm. It has been about a decade, I believe, since, and perhaps even longer, since a recreation facility for the South End has been proposed. Mm-hmm. Those are big ticket items.
Yeah.
And we have to save very carefully. And it's meant that Guelph has, in many respects, put things off for tomorrow that then increase our costs. Like, to give you a good example, to put a library in now downtown Guelph will cost us somewhere between $60 and $90 million. And had we put it in when we possibly could, it would have been less than $20 million. And dare I say, we got rid of the prime piece of property that we could have put it in for $900,000.
That was the renovation of the old post office. Upper Wyndham. Yeah.
Yeah.
And back then, the excuse was it was too expensive.
Yeah. So getting on to that, and let's deal with the housing one.
Yeah.
The housing one is really a problem, because I think most people don't understand that the city of Guelph provides anywhere between $15 and $20 million each year for social housing. Mm-hmm. And I want to differentiate that from affordable housing, which is a principle of planning, which basically says, let's put mixed housing within a neighborhood such that people can afford to buy houses that are at the low end and that are at the top end. And that's way different than what cities are currently permitted to do. On the other side, there's a principle of providing care to people, which we as a city have essentially outsourced to the county, and we provide them with $15 to $20 million each year. The county's in a bind, because it's very, very difficult for them to be able to put new housing in the ground for two reasons. They are limited by essentially the funds that they receive, by any support they get from the province. And really, the political will does not exist at either the provincial or the federal levels to do what they could do with all those forms of taxation that I talked about. And that's to literally put the billions of dollars into housing that are necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Right now in Guelph, we need a minimum of 1,000 units of social affordable housing. Not talking about for sale. I'm talking about rental property for people that are earning very low income, below $30,000. We've got a serious homeless problem and an underhoused problem in Guelph that we need to address.
Right.
The challenge that we have is that by putting minuscule amounts into a budget for that, we cannot hope to address that issue for 30 or 40 years, at which point the money that we've got in our reserves are no longer enough to pay for the housing that we wanted to put in 2019.
I mean, it's so hard to wrap your head around it, right? That, you know, first of all, the varying definitions of housing, support housing, social housing, affordable housing, housing, and then you have the city, you have the county that administers it,
mm-hmm.
money from the province, money from the feds, private funding, like nonprofit groups like Habitat for Humanity. And then when you start like writing the points down on the whiteboard and all the groups that are involved, all the places you have to double check on, you know, it's almost not surprising that this is so hard to get going.
Sure. I mean, the greatest housing program we ever had in Canada was that which essentially the Liberals in 1972 were blackmailed into by David Lewis of the NDP when they said, put co-op and social housing in the ground. And we had a tremendous acceleration of low-cost housing for people. And I'm proud to say that at that point, I was involved in putting the first housing co-op in Guelph in the ground. We spent $39,000 per unit for units between 1 and 4 bedrooms in what's now Winfield Co-op. And it was the last housing program across the country that were under the federal program. We haven't done anything since then, and that's why we're in the mess we are today.
Interesting. That was also during a Trudeau minority government situation.
Who knows what Christmas will hold?
you were talking about how, you know, things, you know, add up over time. And I think, like, come around this time next year, it's going to be a similar problem, isn't it? I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was put on the back burner, deferred a year, being paid for through reserve funding. Aren't we starting the 2021 budget on a back foot?
You know, that also is a good question. And I don't think so. I've had some talks with our Chief Administrative Officer Scott Stewart, and have talked to our Chief Financial Officer Tara Baker about this. Tara, our treasurer, was extremely confident that what she was putting forward was a budget that would allow us to bridge the uncertainty with which we are facing the provincial announcements and what used to be called development charges and are now called community benefits charges. And we don't know what we are going to be receiving in terms of funds from actually expanding Guelph into the Clare Maltby area.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I think is really important, I asked Scott Stewart, our CAO, about this today because I had some feedback from some people who said, are we ever going to get a library or South End Rec Center? And there's some people that are concerned about that. And Stewart was very clear on that. He said, we've got the money that we've put away from development charges, the question becomes, what are we going to provide in the future? I, for one, I'm quite happy to go on record in stating that if we do not provide support for a library and a South End Rec Center, it will be very difficult for me to work toward approving any budget in the future.
Mm.
And so I'm confident what Tara Baker said and what Scott Stewart said, that we're in reasonable financial shape. The misunderstanding that councillors have is that our reserve funds can be used ad infinitum because they can't. They are used for one-time projects. And what I mean by that is we have a reserve fund in case we have a bad snow year. And yes, even in global warming, we have bad snow years. Or we have storms where quite literally trees, hundreds of trees can come down.
Yeah.
Or we have to do flood maintenance. We draw from those funds for a one-time shot. They are not meant to overcome a long-term spending deficit. If we keep dropping into those reserves, as some people would suggest that we do, we're not going to be financially viable. And it won't be in the long term that that's the case. It'll be in the short term.
Yeah. Speaking of this, the community benefit, do we know what that looks like? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but starting on January the 1st, you can't collect DCs for soft DCs like libraries, like rec centers, like parks. Do we know what we can charge for community benefits on January 1st?
Shut your eyes and what do you see? According to my discussion with Scott Stewart this morning, we do not yet know, and we were supposed to know a month ago. I had even asked Tara Baker, the treasurer, whether we should even be proceeding with the budget, not knowing that. And her confidence in why we could move forward assured me that it was appropriate. On the other hand, she said they're going to be coming in 2 weeks.
Right.
Well, it's been a month.
Right, because like the applications aren't going to stop. Like,
nope.
Like, there's stuff that's been approved, and theoretically someone could come into City Hall on January the 2nd and go, here's my, you know, paperwork, I'm ready for my building permit, and we don't know how big a check they have to sign.
Absolutely. And while we are required to prepare for development, we have to have an official plan. It does seem to me that we should slow down development because every house, every apartment, everything that we put into the ground costs the current residents of Guelph approximately times 1.58 what they currently pay on their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So if Scotty here in his palatial mansion
is
paying $1,000 to put a new house in the South End that would then deliver another $1,000, it's costing us $1,500.
Scotty will be fine. He'll have to go. He'll have to go from three Ferraris to two.
Yep, and he's probably going to have to get himself another job at Uber.
That's right.
No comment.
I realize a lot of this is going on behind the scenes in closed meetings, and you can't say a lot. But I mean, we're also expecting word about what might happen with the Guelph Innovation District, the disposition of those lands. Is there anything you can say?
I will say that the new year will bring some interesting times.
Ooh. Interesting good or interesting bad?
I don't know what that means.
Okay.
I really don't know what it
okay.
means, but there could be something newsworthy.
Okay. Stand by for that. You might be the last council guest we have until the new year. Any thoughts about 2019 or, you know, what work you're going to be doing in 2020?
Well, I think still the priorities have to be to provide the effective services and the effective facilities that the city needs. We are going to still continue to need to deal with our surplus assets, such as the drill hall downtown, mm-hmm. and find some solutions to those. We're going to have to grapple with the housing issue, but I think we need to be more clear mm-hmm. on what we've done with housing. We have to be quite honest that we are putting out literally millions of dollars, and we need to recognize that we must develop a rapport with the county that addresses some of our more significant homeless needs. We have to deal with issues of our increase in poverty, which isn't entirely our responsibility, but still gets to that moral duty that we have. And in a time where essentially, with the decline of unions, the minimum wage has actually become the maximum that people are prepared to pay.
Yeah.
That problem is going to continue to increase. So there are a lot of things that we will have to deal with that maybe we don't want to deal with. But if we want Guelph to become or to remain Pleasantville, we're in a position where we have some challenging decisions to make.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it all worked out in the end in Pleasantville.
Just click your heels three times. There was no place like Guelph.
There was some brutal stuff that went down between the opening and closing credits, I'll say. But just maybe to sign off on the housing bit, there's an expectation about something in the counties coming back with a report in January that will maybe signal some movement in this area.
Well, I'm sympathetic to the county. They are in as difficult a position as the city is, and especially on housing. How do you build truly affordable housing that is reasonable for anyone when the land costs you so much that as soon as you buy the land is no longer reasonable?
Yeah.
That's a challenge, and I don't expect much from the county's report.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave that there. Phil Ault, thank you for talking to us today.
Thanks to both of you. Best to you. And thank you, CFRU and students at the University of Guelph, for continuing to fund community radio. You're the best that we've got.
I hope the nerds in the hall appreciate that. I mean that
they
with
better.
All due respect.
They better.
I'm not trying to write off.
They're beating
nerds.
The door down now.
It's like, what about nerds anyway? We'll have to leave that there for this week. If you want to connect to us again, you can go to our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, or go to Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it from our website every Monday, or at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can get it through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can check out guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spanderbook.wordpress.com, and they're going to be a thing there this weekend, by the way.
Oh, they're better.
So,
they're
or
better
else,
be.
And it's not holiday themed either or anything, so.
Wow.
Can you believe it?
Two teasers.
This is my usual Christmas gripe isn't on this year. I'm just not doing it. Not doing
the Grinch is taking the year off.
The Grinch is just, I've had it.
Anyway.
I didn't talk.
And you look so Cindy Lou Who.
Oh, why, thank you. That dress is just one single piece of whatever.
All right, let's wrap this up. Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we will see you then.